between light and darkness. Will you bow down to the darkness? Or will you fight?
Everyone, I was born by God's dear grace in an extraordinary place where the stars and stripes and the eagle fly. It's a big old land with countless dreams, and happiness ain't out of reach. Yeah, I've seen enough to know that we've got it good. Where the stars and stripes and the eagle fly. There's a lady that stands in a harbor for what we believe. And there's a bell that still echoes the price. And if that bothers you, well, that's too bad. But if you got pride and you're proud to do, hey, we could use some more like me and you. Where the stars and stripes and the eagle fly. That I prefer to love my wife and raise my kids, hey, the same way that my daddy did. Where the stars and stripes and the eagles fly. Where the stars and stripes and the eagles.
Welcome to the Shooting Bench on Survival Circle Radio Network, keeping you informed on guns, news, politics, guns, survival, preparedness, and guns. The tyrant is holding our country hostage, and our freedom is at stake. It's time to take a stand and tell the tyrant, we will not comply. Join me now in the never-ending fight against tyranny, right here on the Shooting Bench. Wonders might be present. Alrighty, here we are. Welcome to the Shooting Bench, 8th of July. And I've kind of pulled a fast one on you guys tonight. I'll tell you about that in a minute. Let me turn this down a little bit. That might sound a little better. Jeez. Okay. I believe it's the 19th of this month. The 64K server is going to go away. Seems like nobody listens to it anyway. stand by a minute. I think I swallowed a bug there again. We kind of kept it for a backup all this time and just took it for granted, and I've been paying for it, you know, for almost 5 years, and it's not being used. So we've had real good luck with the 32. We have very, very rarely goes down, so if it goes down, we'll just be down. It's not going to be that big a deal. But that'll help a little bit with the expenses of the station and stuff. So if you need to make any setting changes or anything, in case you do tune to it, you need to get that squared away here sometime in the next 10 days. And to tinker, you can take that player off the top of the website there, the chat room there, whenever you get a chance, no rush. So, speaking of chat room, I guess I better run over here and see if anybody's listening. And we're waiting. There it is. Okay, thank you, Nan. Nan's on top of it there, 5x5. Tebow, thank you. Okay. I heard there was another little earthquake over in California today. I'm not sure if that was true or not. I didn't look it up, so it may or may not have been. But anyway, I told you I was going to pull a fast one on you. And I hate to do this without any warning, but I've got a request for this. And it's been I think nearly 2 years since I've played this, well over a year anyway. And a lot of you have heard it. There's some people that haven't that want to, so they're going to hear it tonight. It's going to take about a little less than 25 minutes. And I think it's critical. I think it's a great piece, and I recorded it a long time ago. And what I'm talking about here is Sundown at Coffin Rock. This is part one and two. It's been a long time since we played it, so I'm going to do that tonight just as a special request. So I'm sorry to dump that on you without any warning, but that's the way it's going to be tonight. So. And I'll be back. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stay here and listen to it with you. And I'll be back when it's over. And we've got some other things we need to talk about. So stand by 1 second. I'm going to get this going here. And I'll be back in about 23 minutes. What I'm about to read is a work of fiction. Any similarity to actual events are yet to be seen. The story originally came out in the Blue Press. About, 98, 99, somewhere in there. The editor there was kind enough to allow distribution on the internet. It's called Sundown at Coffin Rock. This is part one by Raymond K. Payton. I'll read part two if we have time. The old man walked slowly through the dry fallen leaves of autumn. His practiced eye automatically chose the bare and stony places in the trail for his feet. There was scarcely a sound as he passed, though his left knee was stiff with scar tissue. He grunted occasionally as the tight sinews pulled. Damn chainsaw, he thought. Behind him, the boy shuffled along, trying to imitate his grandfather, but unable to mimic the silent motion that the old man had learned during countless winter days upon this wooded mountain in pursuit of game. He's 15 years old, the old man thought. Plenty old enough to be learning. But that was another time, another America. His mind drifted, and he saw himself, a 15-year-old boy, following in the footsteps of his own grandfather, clutching a 12-gauge in his trembling hands as they tracked a wounded whitetail. The leg was hurting worse now, and he slowed his pace a bit. plenty of time. It should have been my own son here with me now, the old man thought sadly. But Jason had no interest, no understanding. He cared for nothing but pounding on the keys of that damn computer terminal. He saw nothing, knew nothing about the woods or where food came from or freedom. And that's my fault, isn't it? The old man stopped and held up his hand, motioning for the boy to look. In the small clearing ahead, the deer stood motionless, watching them. It was a scraggly buck, underfed and sickly, but the boy's eyes lit up with excitement. It had been many years since they'd even seen a single whitetail here on the mountain. After the hunting had stopped, the population had exploded. The deer had eaten the mountain almost bare until erosion had become a serious problem in some places. That following winter, three starving does had wandered into the old man's yard, trying to eat the bark off of his pecan trees, and he had wished the animal rights fanatics could have been there then. It was against the law, but the old man knew a higher law, and he took an axe into the yard and killed the starving beasts. They didn't have the strength to run. The buck finally turned and loped away, and they continued down the trail to the river. When they came to the big oak, the old man turned and pushed through the heavy brush beside the trail, and the boy followed, wordlessly. The old man knew that Thomas was curious about their leaving the trail, but the boy had learned to move silently, well, almost, and that meant no talking. When they came to Coffin Rock, the old man sat down upon it and motioned the boy to join him. "You see this rock, shaped like a casket?" the old man asked. "Yes, sir." The old man smiled. The boy was respectful and polite. He loved the outdoors, too. Everything a man could ask in a grandson. Or a son. I want you to remember this place and what I'm about to tell you. A lot of it isn't going to make sense to you, but it's important, and one day you'll understand it well enough. The old man paused. Now that he was here, he didn't really know where to start. "Before you were born," he began at last, "this country was different. I've told you about hunting, about how everybody who obeyed the law could own guns. A man could speak out anywhere without worrying about whether or not he'd make it back home or not. School was different, too. A man could send his kids to a church school or a private school or even teach them at home. But even in the public schools, they didn't spend all their time trying to brainwash you like they do at yours now." The old man paused and was silent for many minutes. The boy was still watching a chipmunk scavenging below a fallen tree below them. "Things don't ever happen all at once, boy. They just sort of sneak up on you. Sure, we knew guns were important. We just didn't think it would ever happen here in America. But we had to do something about crime," they said. "It was a crisis. Everything was a crisis. There was a drug crisis, terrorism crisis, street crime, drug crime. Even a health care crisis was an excuse to take away a little more of our rights." The old man turned to look at his grandson. "They ever let you read a thing called the Constitution down there at your school?" The boy solemnly shook his head. "Well, the Fourth Amendment's still in there. It says there won't be any unreasonable searches or seizures. It says you're safe in your own home." The old man shrugged. "That had to go. It was a crisis. They can kick your door open any time, day or night, and come in with guns blazing if they thought you had drugs, or later, guns. Oh, at first it was just registration to keep the guns out of the hands of criminals. But that didn't work, of course, and then later they wanted to take them. They knew where to look. They banned assault rifles, and then sniper rifles, and then Saturday night specials. Everything you saw on TV or in the movies was against us. God knows the news people were. And the schools were teaching our kids that nobody needed guns anymore. We tried to take a stand, but we felt like the whole face of our country had changed when we were left outside. Me and a friend of mine, when we saw what was happening, we came and built a secret place up here on the mountain, a place where we could put our guns until we needed them. We figured someday Americans would remember what it was like to be free, what kind of price we had to pay for that freedom, so we hid our guns instead of losing them. One fellow I knew disagreed. He said we ought to use our guns now and stand up to the government, said the colonists had fought for their freedom when the British tried to disarm them at Lexington and Concord. Well, he and a lot of others died in what your history books call the Tax Revolt of 1998. But, son, it wasn't the revolt that caused the repeal of the Second Amendment, like your history book says. The Second Amendment was already long gone before they repealed it. The rest of us thought we were doing the right thing by waiting. I hope to God we were right. You see, Thomas, it isn't government that makes a man free. In the end, government always does just the opposite. They gobble up freedom like hungry pigs. You have to have laws to keep the worst of man under control, but at the same time, the people have to have guns, too, in order to keep the government itself under control. In our country, the people were supposed to be the final authority of the law, but that was a long time ago. Once the guns were gone, there was no reason for those who run the government to give a damn about laws and constitutional rights and such. They just did what they pleased, and anyone who spoke out, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. It took a long time to collect up the millions of firearms that were in private hands. The government created a whole new agency to see to it. There were rewards for turning your friends in, too. Drug dealers and murderers were set free after 2 or 3 years in prison, but possession of a gun would get you mandatory life behind bars with no parole. I don't know how they found out about me. Probably knew I'd been a hunter all these years, or maybe somebody turned me in. They picked me up on suspicion and took me down to the federal building. Son, those guys did everything that they could think of to me. Kept me locked up in this little room for hours. No food, no water. They kept coming in and asking me where the guns were. I said, what guns? Whenever I'd doze off, they'd come crashing in, yelling and hollering. I got to where I didn't know which end was up. I'd say I wanted my lawyer, and they'd laugh. Lawyers are for criminals, they said. You'll get a lawyer when we get the guns. What's so funny is, I know they thought they were doing the right thing. They were fighting crime. When I got home, I found Ruth sitting in the middle of the living room floor, crying her eyes out. The house was a shambles. While I was down there, they come out and took our house apart. Didn't need a search warrant, they said. National emergency. Gun crisis. Your grandma tried to call our preacher, and they ripped the phone out of the wall. Told her they'd go easy on me if they just knew. Tell them where I kept my guns. And the old man laughed. She told him to go to hell. She stared into the distance. He stared into the distance for a moment as the laughter faded. They wouldn't tell her about me, where I was, or anything that whole time. She said she thought I was dead. She never got over that day, and she died the next December. They've been watching me ever since, off and on. I guess there's not much for them to do anymore now that all the guns are gone. Plenty of time to watch one foolish old man. He paused. Beside him, the boy stared at the stone beneath his feet. Anyway, I figured one day America would come to her senses. Our men will need those guns, and they'll be ready. We cleaned them and sealed them up good. They'll last for years. Maybe it won't be in your lifetime, Thomas. Maybe one day you'll be sitting here with your son or grandson. Tell him about me, boy. Tell him about the way I said America used to be. The old man stood, his bad leg shaking unsteadily beneath him. You see the way this stone points? You follow that line 100 feet down the hill, you'll find a big round rock. It looks like it's buried solid, but one man with a good pry bar can lift it. And there's a concrete tunnel right under there where it goes back into the hill. The old man stood, watching as the sun eased towards the ridge, coloring the sky and the world red. Beneath him, the river still splashed among the stones as it had for 1 million years. It's still going, the old man thought. There'll be someone left to carry on for me when I'm gone. It was harder to walk back. He felt old and purposeless now, and it would be easier, he knew, to give in to that aching heaviness in his left lung that had begun to trouble him more and more. Damn cigarettes, he thought. His leg hurt, and the boy silently came up beside him and supported him as they walked the last mile towards the house. How quiet he walks, the old man thought. He's learned well. It was almost dark when the boy walked in. His father looked up from the paper and said, "You and your granddad have a nice walk?" "Yes," the boy answered, opening the refrigerator. "You can call Agent Goodwin tomorrow. Gramps finally showed me where it is." All right, well, since I'm in the mood, I think we're going to go ahead and do part two. So stand by just a second. Let me bring that up here. Sundown at Coffin Rock, Part 2. Thomas sat alone on the cold stone, shivering slightly in the chilly pre-dawn air of this April morning. The flashlight was turned off, resting beside him on the bare granite of Coffin Rock, and involuntarily he strained his eyes in the gray non-light of the false dawn, trying to make out the shapes of the trees and the mountains across the river. Below, he could hear the chuckling of the water as it crossed the polished stones. How many times had he fished there? His grandfather beside him. He tried to shug away the memories, but why else had he come here except to remember? Perhaps to escape the inevitable confrontation with his mother. She would have to be told sooner or later, but Thomas infinitely preferred later. "Mom, I've been expelled from the university," he said out loud in a conversational tone. Some small night animal, startled by the sudden sound, scurried away to the right. "I know this means you won't get that upgrade to C3, and they'll probably turn you down for that surgery now. Gee, Mom, I'm sorry." It sounded so stupid. Why, she would ask. How? How could he explain it? The endless arguments, the whispered warnings, the subtle threats. Dennis had told him to expect this. Dennis had lost his parents back in the first purge in 2004. And his bitter hatred of the state's iron rule had failed to ruin him only because of his unique and accomplished abilities as an actor. Only with Thomas did he open up. Only with Thomas did he relate things that he learned while in the youth re-education camp near Charleston. Thomas shuddered. It was his own fault, he knew. He should have kept his mouth shut, but like Dennis told him. All of his friends had come and shook his hand and pounded him on the back. "That's telling him, Adams," they said, but their voices were hushed as they glanced over their shoulders as they congratulated him. And later the volunteers of the Green Ribbon Squad kicked his ass all over the shower room. They had stood by in nervous silence, their faces turned away, their eyes averted, their tremulous voices silent. He sighed. Could he blame them? He'd been afraid, too, when the squad walked up and surrounded him, and if he could have taken back those proud words, he would have. Anyone is afraid when they can't fight back, he discovered. So they taught him a lesson, and he'd expected it to end there, but then yesterday had come the call to Dr. Morton's office and the brief hearing that had ended his career at the university. "Thomas," Morton had intoned, "you owe everything to the state." Thomas snorted. The light was growing now, and he could see the pale, rain-washed granite in the grayness as it glowed. Coffin Rock was now a knob, a raised promontory that jutted up from the wide, unbroken arm of the mountain's stony roots, its cover of soil pushed away. There were deep gouges scraped across the surface of the rock where the backhoe had tried vainly to force the mountain to reveal its secrets. He was too old to cry now, but Thomas Adams closed his eyes tightly as he relived those moments that had changed his life forever. The shouts and angry accusations as the agents found no secret arms cache still seemed to ring in his ears. They had threatened him with arrest, and once he had thought the government agent named Goodwin would actually strike him. At last, though, they had accepted defeat and turned down the mountain following the gashed trail of tobacco as it rumbled ahead through the woods. At home, he had found his mother and father standing ashen-faced in the doorway. "They took your grandpa," said father in disbelief. "Just after you left, they put him in a van and took him." "But they said they wouldn't," Thomas had shouted, and he ran across the yard to the old man's cottage. The door was standing open as he wandered from room to room, calling for his grandfather he would never see alive again. "It was his heart," they said. 2 days after they'd taken him, someone called and tersely announced that the old man had died in the indigent clinic a few hours after his arrest. "Sorry," the faceless voice had muttered. Thomas had wept at the funeral, but it was only in later years that he had come to understand the greatest tragedy of that day. The old man had died alone, knowing that his own grandson had betrayed him. That grandson was Thomas Adams, and he was now too old to cry. But in the growing light of the cold Mountain Dew dawn, he did anyway. Thomas was certain that his father's decertification 6 months later was due to the debacle in the forest. As much as anyone did these days, they had owned their home, but the certification board would still have evicted them except for the intervention of Cousin Lou, who worked for the state supervisor. As it was, they lost all privileges, and when his father came down with pneumonia the next autumn, medical treatment was denied. He had died 3 days later, after the first anniversary of Grandpa's death. Thomas had been sure that he would be turned down at the university, but once again his cousin had intervened and a slot had opened for him. But now that's finished, he reflected. He would be unable to obtain any certification other than manual labor. Why didn't I keep my mouth shut, he asked in the morning stillness. In a tree behind him, a mockingbird began to sing its ageless song, and as if in answer, the forest below began to twitter and chirp with the voices of other birds greeting the new day. No, what he had said had been truth, and nothing could change that. The state was wrong. It was evil. It was unnatural for men to be slaves of their government, always skulking, always holding their tongues lest they anger the state. But there is no state, Thomas considered. There are only evil men holding power over other men, and anyone who speaks out, dares to challenge that power, is crushed. If only there were a way to fight back. Thomas shifted on the stone, hanging his feet on the downhill side. His feet had almost touched the grass that day, but now, though his legs were certainly longer, it was at least 10 inches to the scarred rock surface below. As he kicked his heels back and forth, he could almost hear his grandfather speak from a long time ago. One day America will come to her senses. Our men will need those guns, and they'll be ready. We cleaned them and sealed them up good. They'll last for years. Maybe it won't be in your lifetime, Thomas, but one day you'll be sitting here with your son or grandson. Tell them about me, boy. Tell them about the way I said America used to be. You see the way that stone points? The old man was saying. You follow that line 100 feet. Thomas's heels were suddenly still. For many minutes he did not move, playing those words over and over in his mind. Follow that line. What hidden place in his brain had concealed those words all these years? How could the threats have failed to dislodge it? He stood upon shaky legs and climbed down the coffin rock. In his mind's eye he could see the old man pointing, and he walked down the hill and through a clinging briar patch, counting off the paces. The round stone did seem solidly buried, but he scratched around near the base, found that the rock ended just an inch or so beneath the surface. One man with a good bar can lift it, Grandfather had said. Thomas forced his fingers beneath the stone, and with all his strength in his 21-year-old body, he lifted. The stone came up, and he slid it to one side. Cool air drifted up out of the dark opening in the mountain. Thomas looked to the right, where the scars of the state's frustration ended, only 15 or 20 feet away. They had been that close. He squatted and started into the darkness and remembered his flashlight. In a moment he was back with it, probing into the darkness with the yellow beam. There was a small patch of moisture just inside, but then the tunnel climbed upwards and toward the ridge. On hands and knees he entered. It was uncomfortably close for the first 20 feet or so, and then the cavern opened up around him. The men who had built this place, he saw, had taken a natural crevice in the granite rock, sealed it with masses of poured concrete, and then covered it with earth. The main chamber was bigger than the living room of a house, and they had left an opening up near the peak of the vaulted roof where fresh air and a faint filtered light entered. Wooden boxes and crates were stacked everywhere on concrete blocks up off the floor, stenciled with legends like rifle caliber 30 M1, 9mm para, 193 ball, 7.62 by 39 mm, and 5.56 mm. He pushed between them and crawled to the wall, where he found cardboard boxes wrapped with plastic sheeting. They were imprinted with strange names like CCI, Olin, WW748, Bullseye, and RL550B. He did not know what the crates and boxes contained and was afraid to break the seals, but near the center of the room he found a plastic-wrapped carton labeled "Open This First." With his penknife he slit the heavy plastic wrapping. It contained books, he saw with some disappointment, but he studied the titles and found that they were manuals on weapons and how to repair them, how to clean them, how to fire them, and ammunition, how to store it, how to reload it. And there was something unusual, a history of the United States. He lifted it from the carton and crawled back to the open air. Leaning against the stone, he tore open a heavy vinyl bag that enclosed the book and began reading at random. Flipped the pages every few moments. On each page, something new met his eye, contradicting everything he had been taught. Freedom is not won, he learned by proud words and declarations. He remembered a quotation taught at the university. Blood alone moves the wheels of history. An Italian dictator named Mussolini had said that, but now he read the of a man named Patrick Henry, who said the Tree of Liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. Mao was required reading at the university too, and now he recalled that this man, called a hero by the state, had once said, "Political power comes from the barrel of a gun. Freedom is never granted, it is won, won by men who are willing to die, willing to lose everything so that others may have the greatest possession of them all, liberty." Mentally, he began to list those he could trust, men who had been arrested for speaking out, women whose husbands had been arrested and never returned, friends who had been denied certification because of their father's military records. The countryside seethed with anger and frustration. These were people who longed to be free, but who had no means to resist, until now. Thomas laid the book aside, then worked the stone back into position, carefully placing leaves and moss around the base to hide any evidence that it had been disturbed. He tucked the book under his arm and started for home, with the rays of the rising sun warming his back. He imagined his grandfather's touch in the heat, a forgiving touch. A long, hard struggle was coming, he knew with certainty, that defied the explanation that he would not live to see the day America would once again be free. His blood and that of many patriots and tyrants would be spilled, but perhaps America's Tree of Liberty would live and flourish again. There is a long line stretching through the history of this world, a line of those who valued freedom more than their lives. Thomas Adams now took his place at the end of that column as he determined that he would have liberty or death. He would be in good company.
I love that. I've listened to it, I don't know how many times, for the last almost probably 20 years. Yeah, it's been 20 years. And I've listened to it numerous times, and I'd absolutely love it. It is so true, so accurate. And right now, this is the perfect time to have played that again. I hope everybody stuck around and listened to it. It's a good show, good deal. So maybe we'll spend some more time discussing that a little bit. I've got a few other things I need to go over. By the way, Wednesday night, I hope y'all will come and listen. We've got we're going to spend some time talking about Tara Tinney's. That's Jeanette Finnicum's daughter and LaVoy's daughter. We're going to spend some time talking about her new book and give you some little review of that and tell you how you can get a hold of it. It is a marvelous book. All right, let's move on here. Let me open this thing up. So I've got a lot of things to go through, so I'm going to go through them kind of quickly here. It looks like Ohio, believe it or not, is going to be our next quote-unquote constitutional carry state, if you can believe that, permitless carry. So they have given their initial approval for it, and still needs to be, I think it still needs to go to the Senate and be signed, but it's looking pretty good. It got a good heavy vote, so I think that that may be the next deal here. I'm not going to spend any time on that census deal. We'll spend some time maybe next week. We're going to spend a little bit of time on this census issue, or senseless issue, or whatever. You know what? What I need to do here is I need to pull these things together right here real quick. There we go. All right. All right, give me a minute here and we'll be back.
I'll be back.
Nobody wants
to get high on the town. And all my rowdy friends have settled down. And I think I know what my father meant when he sang about a lost highway. And old George Jones, I'm glad to see, is finally getting straight. And nobody wants to get drunk and get loud. And all my rowdy friends have settled down.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
All right, we're back. Let me run over here to the chat room again real quick. I think I saw, Frog is with it. Frog, you missed a good story, buddy. We'll have to get that podcast up so you can listen to that. I know you've never heard it, and some of the other guys wanted to hear that. I'll get it going for you tonight and get it posted so you can listen to it. We're glad you made it over here tonight. All right, got a lot of things to cover. We told you. I think we told you already that if you haven't, you saw it, seen it on Facebook about the governor of Arizona pulling Nike's financial incentives. So they were coming to Arizona. I don't know if they still will or not. New Mexico has offered them the opportunity to come there, which doesn't surprise me any. All right, let's get down to business here. In Southwest Alaska, it looks like a pack of wolves or a couple of wolves has killed a teacher up there. And I've pulled up quite a few stories. I've had this argument with a lot of people about how they don't kill people. They do kill people. There's even things in my grandma's journal from 18... 1890-something about things that happened with wolves and grizzly bears and whatnot. You've heard the story about my my great-granddad fighting that grizzly bear over in the Luna area over in Catron County. But DNA has confirmed that these wolves have killed this teacher. They chased her down. She was jogging down a road, and it happened last year. And I guess it took this long to get it all ironed out and everything, but that went well with my Federal Wolf Gang Facebook page. I've got one on Facebook and one on Gab. They're the same thing, and I post the same stories, but for a different crowd. I've got almost as many. No, I don't either. I've got a little over half as many followers on Gab as I do on Facebook, so it's growing pretty fast. There'll come a day when Facebook will slowly get the boot, but for right now, it's still serving its purpose. So it says that her death, anyway, was unprecedented in Alaska, but the animals were immediately suspected. The state examiner, medical examiner, concluded that she died from animal mauling. The investigators found drag marks and wolf tracks around the body. 8 wolves were culled after this happened, and DNA from 2 of the wolves was confirmed on her body and clothing, including one wolf who was not killed. Why it was not killed, I don't know. It sounds like it should have been. Anyway, this girl was 4'10", 115 pounds, very fit and active, and after school she bided her time by running and stuff. So anyway, so much for wolves not killing people. I think we talked about, I don't remember if we talked about this, so I'm just going to mention the headline. Talked about Walmart no longer selling guns in New Mexico. And I can't blame them. It's not an anti-gun move on Walmart's part. It's a business decision. You can blame your legislators over there and your governor for that, not Walmart. It has become way too much of a hassle. The risks are too great to mess with it. It's just not worth it anymore. You know, I saw this coming. I didn't see New Mexico, you know, this law coming for New Mexico, but I've just seen the overall atmosphere here about guns coming is why I gave up my FFL. It was too much then to deal with all the, you know, to be under the Fed's thumb all the time. I just gave it up. So I'm a little disappointed here. You know, a lot of people applaud this, and I know why. And ordinarily I would, and I probably would have a few years ago. But it looks like President Trump is backing a bill here that will make burning the American flag illegal, which means that they have to trash the Fourth Amendment, First Amendment, to do that. And that's not a good thing. I mean, we have to, you know, the Constitution is either for all of us or none of us. And burning the flag, there's few things piss me off any worse than burning the flag. But it is still their First Amendment right to do so, as despicable and frustrating as it is. They still have every right to do it, whoever decides they want to do that. So if this goes through, then there's nothing stopping them from doing the same thing for, what's a good example here? Maybe I shouldn't open my mouth. I can't think of a good example. But anyway, I think what Trump needs here, both with this issue here and with some Second Amendment issues,
He needs educated. He has people that advise him in various things that are probably either not on our side or not completely educated themselves on how to proceed with things like this. I think if someone could have sat down and talked to him for 5 or 10 minutes about the Second Amendment, that the bump stock ban probably never would have happened. I still don't believe that Trump is anti-gun. I think he's uneducated as far as some of this stuff goes. So, anyway, we'll see where this goes. It's unfortunate that it's happening this way, but it says that the story starts out, it says it was a fitting piece of legislation to propose on Flag Day, not to mention somewhat of a birthday gift for President Trump. On Friday, Republicans reintroduced a proposal calling for a ban on burning an American flag. It was immediately endorsed by President Trump. I understand. I completely understand their reasoning for this and their sentiment towards the flag. I get it. But someone needs to jump in there and explain the Constitution to them. The legislation is being sponsored by a senator out of Montana and North Dakota and Arkansas. One of them said, it could be argued that this only applies to the flag and is not going to apply to anything else because the flag is sacred and the flag is, it's important. It's our symbol. It's one of the most important things out there. But it goes right along with the Constitution and the Bible and everything else. But if we say that, if we make an allowance, for one thing, there is not a thing in the world to ever stop this from happening again and make an allowance for something else. If they make an allowance for this, why could they not make an allowance to burn books or to confiscate books and burn them or burn Bibles only? Or constitutions only, or Books of Mormon only, or, you get what I'm saying. There's nothing there. If they can make this allowance, if they can make this exception, there is nothing in the world to keep them from making another exception some other time. Look at the story here. You can't look at it because number one, it's gone. And number two, we listened to it. We didn't look at it. Look at the story we just heard. And how they made the Constitution and they very much like China or Nazi Germany or whatever, where they made talking about certain things illegal, so illegal that people were imprisoned for the things they said. That happens in Russia. It happened in China. It happens it happened in Nazi Germany. Happened in a lot of places around the world. Fortunately, it hasn't happened here yet. But that's the... it could easily go there. See, Mountain Shooter, what are you talking about, Copas crowds? I don't even know what in the world you're talking about. And by the way, up there a little earlier, you said 6.4 and 7.1. I know that. But I someone indicated that there was another one today. But didn't say how big it was. It may have just been a insignificant aftershock. I don't know. I didn't try to look up the story. But anyway, so I still don't understand the crowd thing there. But. Okay, I had another deal here. Let me see if I can find that. I don't believe this was Tuesday.
Yeah, I think we did talk about Chief Gallagher in the Navy SEAL guilty of not murdering the ISIS prisoner. I think we talked about that Wednesday. What happened is I lost my mark here. I usually put a mark in between these links and stuff, and for some reason I either forgot to do it or put it in the wrong place or something, so I'm not sure if I'm covering some things that I have already covered. Alright. I know we talked about this several months ago. I want to do a little refresher on this for all of you, especially Frog, any of you that are listening that have radios like this. Once again, and it's cracking down, remember we talked a long time ago about probably a year and a half ago, about them cracking down on the little Bofang radios and the Pofung radios and the Chung Pao radio, whatever in the hell these ones come from China. Reason being is because they go too many places and do too many things. They're trying to crack down on them. They're not going to confiscate the ones that you have, at least not yet, but they're cracking down on the use of these on unauthorized channels. They're gonna stop the import of them. And I believe it's in September of this year, another couple of months. So you're going to wake up one day and you're going to get on Amazon to order a couple of them and they're going to be gone. At least that's the way it stands right now. So, as I have said numerous times, get a couple extras. Get four, five, six extras if you can afford them. The little UV5Rs are cheap. They're $25. Get a couple of them and put away. Get a couple of UV82HPs and put away. You've got a couple of months to do this. This is not something that you can just put off. They're going to be gone. And anything that you can get from here on out are going to be the $250 imported radios that are good only for 2 meter and 70 centimeters. Now, right now, the Bofangs and the ones that are similar to that, we have the option of going to the 155 frequency, which is a lot of the, you know, search and rescue and sheriffs and some of the law enforcement and stuff. But that's what our emergency communications network is on. And we've had a couple of people wanted to join our network and wanted me to program their radio. And I said, well, I don't think it'll work, but I'll try it. And I've taken, Kenwood's and, what's that other one that's pretty popular? I can't think of it right now. But you can't program that in there. I can put in the part where they can hear it, but they cannot transmit on it because that frequency is not allowed on 99% of those radios that are made in the United States. You have to get a ICOM. No, that's not it, Mountain Shooter. It's another handheld. It starts, I think, with an F. I'll be damned. I don't know why I can't think of that. Anyway, there's a lot of them besides Kenwood. There's quite a few of them that's just like that. I have an ICOM, actually, a base, and it's 2 meter only. Can't do anything else with it. So that's going to, for one thing, it's going to limit who you can talk to and what you can do with it. But it also means you will absolutely have to get a license. You will be forced to get a license or risk getting caught talking on these. No, yes, yeah, that's it. Yeah, come on, Glock, thank you. The Yesu, that's exactly what it is. I don't think you spelled it right, but that's close enough. The license is free. But it is still another restriction. Once you get that license, I'm a firm believer in getting a license. Don't get me wrong. I've got mine, and I think that you should get one. But being forced to get it because of them banning these radios, I think, is wrong. Now, I get it. I fully understand that we're not supposed to be talking on a lot of those frequencies. But what they need to understand is that when we're up in the mountains and we've turned that thing down to 1 watt and we get on one of those restricted channels, like let's say you get on an FRS frequency with one of these little radios, yes, it's illegal, but who is ever going to know? It's not going to interfere with anything. And tell you that they're imposing penalties on people for what they might do. And that's like so many things. People impose penalties. I mean, the government imposes penalties and threats of penalties and everything on what might happen. That's like this, it's like texting laws, texting and driving laws. They're punishing you for what you might do, on what might happen if you text. Thousands of laws are that way on what might happen, which, as far as I'm concerned, each and every one of them are unconstitutional. Now, I'm all for, I have no problem with enhanced penalties for certain things. Let's say if you have a wreck and they prove that you're texting and driving, then maybe they could enhance that with, you know, anything from an additional 5 years in prison to the death penalty if you kill somebody or whatever. You know, that's just a for instance. But anyway. All right. Well, it's that time already. Now, remember Wednesday we're going to spend some time talking about Tara Tenney's new book. It's a great book. You'll like it as much as you did Lavoie's book. I've strongly recommend that you get a copy of this, and we'll give you all the details on that on Wednesday night. Okay, well, I'm going to dash on out of here. I will be back Wednesday, barring any unnatural or natural disasters or peculiar things that might accidentally happen, and I should be back live with Liberty Lounge this Friday. So I'm kind of ironing things out and getting things smoothed up a little bit and trying to be a little more consistent, and consistency is a good thing. This is what Doc and I talked about. I talked to Doc on the phone quite a bit. Doc's very, very knowledgeable about this stuff, about radio, and he has such a marvelous radio voice. And one of the things that we discussed was, you know, to get the crowds up, we've got to have consistency, and I said, well, you know, we can't have 100% consistent live radio. Rush Limbaugh is consistent because it's not live. You know, a lot of these other shows are pre-recorded, even if it's just by, you know, a few hours. But when you are live as Sprechen at the time, you know, things come up and it's just can't be done sometimes. So the other option is, you're welcome, Yakima Glock. Thanks for joining us. The other option is to do them pre-recorded so that you always have a pre-recorded show to listen to. That takes away the interaction with the chat room and everything else. So I don't know. We're still looking for the perfect solution here, but, we'll worry about that later. Right now, we're going to sign off, and we'll see you guys Wednesday night. Thanks for joining.
Well, that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining.
No reconciliation, no. said, you know.